Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.
Hello and welcome to Pastor's Perspective, sponsored by Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa. My name is Brian Perez, and we are here ready to talk to you, ready to answer the questions you might have about the Bible, the Christian faith, just about anything that's on your mind. Give us a call at 888-564-6173, 888-564-6173. Maybe you heard something on a message earlier today on the radio here that made you scratch your head or something, and you want to call and get some clarification. Well, we would love to try to clarify for you. 888-564-6173 is the number to call. And answering your questions today, we've got Brian Broderson, the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa in Southern California. You also hear him on the Back to Basics radio program. Joining us from Charlotte, North Carolina, we've got Bobby Conway, the pastor of Image Church. And you also see Bobby on the Christianity Still Makes Sense YouTube channel. And Dr. Ed Stetzer is somewhere around here. He'll be joining us in a little bit as well. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Bri.
What's up?
How's it going, man?
Good.
Good.
All is well.
Good. How's Bobby doing?
Doing great. Yeah, really good.
Doing great. Good. Still got that warm weather back there?
Yeah, very. It's so nice, and it feels so good to finally have it.
Yeah.
Warm, because it has been, a little bit oppressive at times.
Yeah.
So it feels great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, look who the cat drug in.
What I'm referred to as the thing
he
the
made
cat
it.
Drug in? All right.
You know, it's a typical doctor. You know, you have a doctor's appointment at 8 o'clock. You go there, and like 9:30, they're going, we're going to get, you know, the doctor's busy. He'll be out
soon.
Well,
I know you were planting churches in, like, Russia or something, but if you had gone to traditional college pathway, which you didn't do, you went a very non-traditional pathway, you would know that there's a professor rule that if the professor doesn't have a doctorate and he or she's 10 minutes late, you have to wait 10 minutes. But if he has a doctorate or she has a doctorate, you have to wait 15 minutes.
Okay.
So technically.
Well, you were close.
I'm literally like, it's a minute.
Okay.
It's 1 minute. You know, I'm sorry that I've got to drive across town from Biola University, which is a little traffic on I-5.
Yes.
But here I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Where all you had to do is walk across. You drove your little cart.
He has this little golf cart.
Like some guy in a retirement community driving around across the property.
Hey, man, that's the way we do it.
And all Bobby's got to do is press a button and show up. So yes. I'm here, so leave me alone. Leave me alone. Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Stetzer. Good to connect with you. After that quite lovely welcome from Brian Broderson.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. What are friends for?
Not
except
that,
to give.
It appears.
Nice,
not
that. Warm welcomes.
888-564-6173 is the number to call us with your questions from now till 4 p.m. Pacific time to ask Brian Broderson, Bobby Conway, and Dr. Ed Stetzer. So give us a call.
Yeah, and if you have any, like, questions about any
obscure
thing, anything in the Old Testament that is really obscure that nobody has addressed. Dr. Ed is here for you.
I am not. Just for the record, for those of you who don't know, I'm the dean at the Talbot School of Theology at Biola University, and I'm not an Old Testament professor. I am. My field is missiology, which is engaging culture.
All right.
So just saying. Just saying.
All right.
But I do lead the Talbot School of Theology. So what we need on this show is like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Phone a friend. So I can pick up the phone and call one of our Old Testament professors and say, hey, what do you think? Not even tell them. Like, don't tell them ahead of time.
Yeah, that's a great
idea. I was somebody's phone a friend when they were on one of those shows.
Really? Yeah.
It really was. Yeah. And they didn't need me. But I was like, they tell you. You got to be sitting by. It's not like, you know, you're out grabbing a sandwich and they call.
Yeah.
So you got to be sitting by the phone at the time. So, but we could just call them up and not tell them ahead of time. I'd love that. So.
Well, and you know, for obscure Old Testament stuff, we could call Dominic.
Dominic Hernandez, our mutual friend.
Yes.
Who just put out a great tweet, by the way, on being a minority person in higher education, some of the challenges that are there. I just shared his tweet. And Dominic Hernandez is just, he's brilliant, PhD, Where did he go to school?
He went to school in Israel, in Jerusalem,
I think, and teaches Old Testament for us at the Talbot School of Theology, and has a Calvary Chapel background.
Yeah, Calvary Chapel background.
Mm-hmm. Calvary Chapel kid? Like, did he grow up in this context?
Yeah, not here. He grew up on the East Coast, and then he came here to our school of ministry and did our school of ministry. And he had already been educated. I think he came with a master's degree, but not in anything biblical or theological. He left us and went to Princeton, and there I think he did like an MDiv or something.
Couldn't get into a good school.
Princeton, right.
So, I'm actually we're talking about him behind his back, so I'm looking at his – he did his PhD at Bar-Ilan University, MDiv at Princeton, MA at Teachers College at Columbia, and then Westchester University of Pennsylvania. But he's associate professor of Old Testament and Semitic. So when you talk to him – like, he'll be sitting at the table, you go up to him, he's talking to somebody in modern Hebrew, but he also could do ancient Hebrew. And he teaches Old Testament, and he leads Talbot in Espanol. You know, we have a whole Spanish, wing now.
Yeah.
Like, undergrad, certificate, master's stuff. Yeah. Dude, it's good stuff. Sometimes I forget that you and Dom, did you guys go to Peru just recently?
We did. Yeah.
Okay. You didn't invite me to Peru.
Yeah, he was
you would have been late
for you down there.
I would have been late. Wow. It's a little more culturally acceptable in some contexts than it is on live radio.
No, he was repping Talbot School of Theology. He gave a whole, kind of a presentation on the program, which was excellent. And but my funnest times with Dominic, though, are in Israel, because you're walking around with him and nobody knows that he's not a local, because his Hebrew is so flawless.
Modern Hebrew, which is very different than ancient Hebrew, which he also teaches.
Yeah, people just
Hebrew.
Think he's, and he's Hispanic, but most people think he's an Israeli. So, it's fun.
That's fun. We need to take him and go to Israel. We've been to Israel together.
We have.
Brian Press didn't come with us. Yes. Bobby Conway didn't come with us. We should do an Israel trip together. When we went to Israel, Bobby, and all of our guests, there were a group of, 15 of us or so, and of the, maybe 20, like half of the group got a tattoo while they were in Israel in our group.
They did, yes.
And Bobby, those of you who don't know, Bobby's got, he's sporting some tats on those arms of his. So, but Brian Broderson, he did not get a tattoo because we should have someone call in and ask her tattoos.
But remember, everybody thought I was going to do it and they were so excited. And then I was joking with them.
Like, yes, you did you kind of got this mischievous sense of humor.
But Razouk's, where everybody got their tattoo, did you know that the West Coast representative for Razouk's is Neil Gotting, who is on our staff, and he does tattooing for Razouk's here in Southern California.
I had no idea. Now, for those of you who don't know, Razouk's is the oldest continuously operating tattoo parlor in the world.
In the world,
700 years.
Yeah.
They've been doing tattoos, and so they have a branch in L.A. If you don't go to the Jerusalem, what's the point?
Well, you know.
It's like saying famous Italian restaurant. But not in Italy.
Yeah.
They're not using the same tools from 700 years.
They literally take out stone chisels. That's how Bobby got his tattoos on his arm. It's just stone chisels in Israel.
Right. So did you get one, Ed?
I did not get one there. I do have tattoos. So if you'd like to call in and ask us if tattoos are okay, it's 888-564-6173. Because the very first time I was on Pastor's Perspective, someone asked the tattoo question.
Yeah.
And I felt a little bit like, well, maybe Brian should answer that one since his skin is flawless.
Yeah.
Perez, do you have any?
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Bobby?
Yeah, Ed, it's a lot more edgy than you would.
That's what Ed is short for, right? Edgy? Edgy Stetzer.
That's it. You know, he has this mild-mannered professor look. But he's really.
I'm not the one who was talking about the Easter Bunny last time. I think you were all in on the Easter Bunny, and I was a little bit cautious about holiday myths.
We were going to plan to beat up the Easter Bunny.
Easter egg hunts at church. I'm just saying. Folks, you can call in and talk to about these concerns you have with our friend Brian Broderson at 888-564-6173. I just like giving out the number, Perez.
I can tell. I can tell.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go with a question that was sent in online from Kevin, who listened to Pastor Brian Broderson this morning on the Back to Basics radio program. And Kevin says, Brian was teaching on Malachi chapter 3, verse 5, which says, I will come near to you to judgment. I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers and against the perjurers and against those who oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and who deprive the foreigner of justice and don't fear me, says Yahweh of armies. I am one that believes in secure borders. But this got me to thinking about those who deprive the foreigner. I had a moment where I thought on this and wanted to see, without getting into the political weeds, how you feel about those coming across. I pray for a resolution to the border issue. Just want to see how you are praying for and feeling about it. Brian.
Without getting into politics is what he said. So I'm looking forward to seeing how you pull that off because I'm holding back.
Yeah, I believe in legal immigration. I think borders are a good thing. Apparently everybody in the world thinks they're a good thing because everybody in the world, every country in the world has borders. So it's nothing new and it's nothing evil. And of course, many people that live in this country came from other countries. They crossed the border legally and settled in this country. Now, I used to live in England. And when I went to England, I had to have a visa. I always have to show my passport when I fly into London. And, you know, I'm going to go about my business in the UK, but I'm not going to go about my business until I pass through the border and through immigration. And I think it's just common sense. So I think we should have borders. I think we should enforce the border. That's what a border is there for. I don't think anybody thought this was a bad idea until relatively recently. And so we do need to be, I think, sensitive to foreigners. And I think we need to understand the plight of people, even people who come across illegally. I think we need to have sympathy and so forth. But I don't think it's wise to just say, we're not going to worry about the border. Whoever wants to come across, we'll just let anybody in. I think that's a recipe for disaster. So,
Bobby Conway.
Yeah, I mean, I think anything in life, we have to have some borders. If you don't have boundaries and borders, then we'll destroy ourselves. We'll end up with all kinds of issues. So we talk about, hey, we're a free country. We want to be free. Well, we want the right kind of freedom. A freedom without boundaries leads to addiction and slavery. So we need some borders to protect us. And so you can think, for example, this wouldn't work in colleges and universities where you just say, oh, you know what? We're not going to have any boundaries up. There's no process. Just you can come straight from fifth grade right into our university. Here you go, because we're not going to have any borders. We're not going to have any boundaries. You can come work for us. You know, we're not going to have any process. So processes and policies can be a good thing. And they are needed. And I think in a time where we're living, where we see some of the danger, think of like France, for example, with some of the Islamic issues, or even think about Richard Dawkins, who is mourning the loss of Christendom and its values in Europe right now and in England, as he describes himself as a cultural Christian, the one who went so hard at Christians in his God Delusion book, is now decrying the fact that, you know what, England is going to be a predominantly Islamic culture at some point because they're infiltrating that area. And so I would say, if you just open stuff up to anybody, then you can never really even have a constitution, because it can just constantly be, you know, changed and flipped. So it seems like a really weak argument to not have a process. And so when people are talking about having a process, they're not saying we're not for having people come into the country any more than when a university says, let's have a process for accepting students. That doesn't mean that they're not for having students come to their university. They are, but they want the students to buy into what the university stands for.
Ed Stetzer.
Oh, I have so many follow-up questions for Brian Brodersen and for Bobby Conway. All right, let's wade in. Like, I'll continue to wade in. So, first of all, there were no borders in the same way that we think of borders 2,000 years ago. So, when we look to the pages of the New Testament, it's difficult. In this case, he's going from Malachi from the Old Testament. I mean, there were empires. There were occasional borders, like Hadrian's Wall was built at the edge of the Roman Empire to keep out the Scots and the Picts ahead north of there. But by and large, you had peoples who were ethno-linguistic people groups. So Jesus says, go to all peoples, all nations. It's pantata ethne. So where we – the root word of our English word, ethnic, not quite the same meaning. So, but there weren't – the nation state didn't exist as an idea when Malachi was written among other nation states, right? So we'd have a border, we'd have passports, we'd have customs, we'd have walls. So that wasn't a concept. Their cities had walls, not nations.
Yeah, but...
But keep going. Can I finish? Can I finish? But you go ahead.
But let me just say Malachi. Yeah. In Malachi's context, of course, people coming from outside the land of Israel were considered foreigners. That's
right.
What a foreigner was.
And I'm headed that way.
Okay.
Sojourners.
You need to get there quicker.
Well... You know, if you're a professor, you got to fill up like 50 minutes of lecture.
All right.
So there were rules that, got to remember, these are nomadic peoples. So when a sojourner or a foreigner was in the land, you literally were supposed to take care of that person at maybe your, you know, the place where you have water, and there's a sense of that. So part of the challenge is we can't kind of take modern border debates and just overlay them with New Testament, or in this case, Old Testament passages about caring for the foreigner in your midst. However, it still doesn't answer some of the questions. For example, you guys basically took a position that you're for legal immigration, which is not a particularly controversial aspect of it. However, evangelicals are the least enthusiastic, have the lowest approval of legal immigration, not just illegal immigration, but legal immigration. So the question then becomes twofold. How do you have a secure border? Do you build a wall across the southern border? Do you? And then how do you deal with people who have come across the border, which are unprecedented levels right now and because of ultimately the failure of our current border policy?
Yeah.
So then people talk about undocumented immigrants or people – it depends on the side you're on. People say illegal aliens or undocumented immigrants. So I think the question then becomes, if I could press a little more, we all agree legal immigration is good. My ancestors were Irish immigrants who legally immigrated this country. Sort of legally immigrated. One of them jumped off the boat before Ellis Island because he was wanted for a crime. But nevertheless, the rest of them did.
I'm not shocked.
I'm not surprised. You're not shocked by that.
No.
So, but the challenge is the way sometimes I hear Christians talk about people who are here as undocumented immigrants.
Yeah.
As if they're, I mean, one Christian leader wrote a book portraying them as like animals trying to get over a wall. Yeah. So what I would say is we want to be the kind of Christians who speak of all people made in the image of God, worthy of dignity and respect. So I think Christians can disagree. The Bible, there's nowhere in the Bible where it says this is the number of people who should migrate across the southern border in the United States. You can't go to Second Opinions chapter 4, verse 11.
Yeah.
So what I would say to our caller, our question, the guy who asked the question on Facebook, is that our answers are often common sense answers.
Yes.
We're not going to you and saying that this is an unprecedented question not addressed in New Testament or Old Testament times.
My answer was strictly common sense.
Yeah. And that's where it gets tricky.
Answer.
So, but here's some things that we think are biblical too. I think I'm really concerned the way I hear some Christians speak of people who have illegally immigrated, use the term they'd use. Again, now I think Christians can and should, and we might even debate how our border policy might work. I think we most would agree now it's really not working at all. It's a crisis right now.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately how we speak of undocumented immigrants, how we then, like even here, like right now, we all know Romans 13 talks about the government setting laws. We're kind of on the other side of the Romans 13 barrier. So I'm not deciding border policy. I'm deciding how my church and how Bobby's church and how your church ministers to people who are here who came across maybe not following a legal migrant. And so for me, I want us to show compassion, love, care, concern, and more. And I think we can also advocate in the public square for an end to what right now is a pretty crisis-driven border policy.
Absolutely.
But I think his question was, it's difficult.
Yeah.
You can't really take – now, here's the thing. The way you should treat people in the Old Testament is – universally, we are to care for those who are the sojourner, the stranger in the land.
Yeah.
However, that's a different time in a nomadic people. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the law of the sea. In the law of the sea, if you find someone in a boat, their boat, you're supposed to, if you're out in a boat, you're supposed to stop what you're doing, go help that person because they're all by themselves. Mm-hmm. It's not that dissimilar to nomadic peoples in the Old Testament who are away from an oasis, have no water, you're supposed to care for them because they're going to care for you when you're wandering across the sands.
Yeah, and God always reminded Israel about their previous state as being, you know, in bondage, being in another country, keeping the sojourner in mind based upon their own experiences, which, of course, would call for compassion and toward them and so forth. Yeah, I have, for a long time, I have thought that this whole immigration thing, you have to look at it in two ways, and you have to look at it from the common sense standpoint, like you said, Ed, and from, you know, just the legal standpoint and the historical standpoint here in this country. But you also have to look at it from the standpoint of just people and what is the heart of God for people? What is the attitude of Christ toward people? And I have heard over the years, of course, I've heard people insinuate, even with legal immigrants, that, hey, you know, these people are messing up our country. They're not from here. They're bringing in different cultures. I think it's a wonderful blessing that people came and brought in different cultures. And you're a missiologist. I'm a missions guy.
Yep.
So I thank God that the mission field has come to us, and I want to take full advantage of the opportunities.
And when we hear things like, well, you know, they're sending their worst people.
Yeah.
And for example, someone who comes from Mexico, mm-hmm. who comes as an undocumented immigrant,
yeah.
is more likely to be an evangelical pastor than yeah. a murderer or, a,
yes.
or some sort of yeah. Criminal. And I think that's important. You know, we know that immigrants commit crime at a lower level. We know all these things, like yeah. statistically, we say these things. However, it doesn't mean that, I mean, right now it's not working at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we have a shocking lack of political will right yeah. now between our parties to address
yeah.
these things.
Yeah. And I mean, think about it. We, you know, I've lived in California basically my whole life. We have not had these issues. The border's always been right where it is.
Yeah.
And we haven't had these issues until just fairly recently. And so I think the problem is more in our political system than it is in the situation with the people that are trying to get across the border. The majority of them are just looking for a better living experience.
I'm just thankful we started off with a non-controversial topic.
Right?
Right, yes.
But it is good to talk about these things sometimes.
I think
because
it's good.
I think this is an important thing. One of the things that I love is the multi-ethnic nature of our church. I absolutely love it.
And I love that about your church. And I love Southern California for that.
Yeah, me too. And I want it to stay that way.
Yeah, it's good.
But I think having, you know, safe communities is a good thing too.
Yeah.
But, you know, people often say, oh, if you say anything like, you know, that's kind of racist. Look, I don't care what color you are. If you're committing crime, we need to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the whitest person on the block and you're a criminal, then you need to be dealt with.
Right. I guess the question, though, is that in the assumption of that, is the assumption that because people have crossed the border undocumented or illegally, that they're yeah. more likely to commit crimes. Mm-hmm. And I think the argument that maybe stronger is not that. I think the argument may be stronger is socioeconomically, we don't have the same commonality of starting point. Mm-hmm. And so can a country sustain
yeah.
that socioeconomically? Because
yeah.
I think when you say safe, I'd want to be careful not to say that people should be afraid mm-hmm. of what is most people who are filled with just wanting the best for their family and
yeah.
more.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think what we all agree on, and I think it's more common sense, is that our current leaders are failing us
yeah.
and really choosing to fail us. And
yeah.
again, this is both Democrat and Republican mm-hmm. who, rather than even coming together on a recent opportunity, said, nope, we're not going to do it now because we're just going to keep making it an election issue. It's been an election issue for a long time,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and it's not helping to continue to delay it.
Bobby Conway?
Yeah, I think the only other thing that I would add to it is I don't think this is a racial discussion either. I would apply the same principle to myself. If I wanted to go live in another country, I think it would be unreasonable for me to expect that I don't have to go through a process. I think that it would be very expected, and I would have no problem if I felt like, look, I want to go live in another country. And if I want to move to another country, I shouldn't expect just because I want to move to another country that I just get to show up how I want without, you know, learning about the culture that I'm going into, learning about the values of the culture, you know, making sure it's a good fit for me and my family to move to. And if they had a certain process for me to go through, I wouldn't be trying to, you know, undo their process so that I could come into the culture.
Agreed. Agreed. I think that's good. And I would say to believing in things like, again, this is not a biblical command, but believing in things like democracy, the rule of law, I mean, those would be things that we'd want. I don't know if you know this, but Donna's a naturalized citizen. I don't know if you know
that. She's I know she's Canadian.
Okay, she's Canadian, so she's a U.S. She's a U.S. citizen now.
Yeah.
U.S.
Okay,
citizen.
Wow.
So, yeah, years ago. And you had to, like, take a test, and she had to have certain, like, believe in some things like democracy. You know, Canada believes in democracy, so that helps. But not every place does, and I think that that matters as we think about our immigration policy.
All right, I think we answered that thoroughly enough.
Wow, that was a lot. Kevin, we should ask more questions about that, too.
Kevin, did we answer your question? Well, Kevin sent in his question, so we have no way.
Kevin, like, how do you, Kevin, just speak into your ear?
I don't know. No, I'll find out later.
Yes.
I'll let Kevin know that we answered his question. And yeah. Hey, look, we do have a tattoo question. David in Lynchburg, Virginia, listening on Equip FM. Go ahead.
How's everyone doing?
Great.
Good. Thank you.
I heard what y'all were talking about earlier when y'all first started the show. And I mentioned the tattoo problem, and that spoke to me highly. And I've got some tattoos from my past. The Lord pulled me out of a motorcycle club, a couple of them. And I've got some tattoos in my hand I'm not too proud of, and I want to cover them up. Is it against the word of God to cover them up?
Bobby Conway, what say you?
Is it against God's will to cover them
word,
up?
God's
is
word.
Is that what you... I missed the last part.
Yeah, that was basically
Is it against God's word to cover up your tattoos?
To get new tattoos to cover up the old tattoos.
Yeah, no, I think that, I mean, you know, if you don't like what they represent, you already have ink there, right? And so they say, you know, think before you ink because, you know, you might want to, you know, do a cover up. But, you know, if let's say you in your past put a demon on your left shoulder and then... You already had the ink there, but then decided, you know what? I want to add new ink to make it not a demon. I don't think that would be a problem at all. In fact, I think that would be a good thing.
Ed?
Yeah, I think what I would add with Bobby, I think he's not necessarily, he's asking, I mean, he could have it removed. I mean, that's painful, as you know. He could have it removed.
Yeah,
I think if I understand the question is it better to back it up and, you know, do that laser removal, which, just let me tell you, is a nightmare. But again, and it's kind of hard. I know that, David, you can't see Bobby, but Bobby has a sleeve tatted on. I just wanted you to know that Bobby is the wrong person to ask this question. And I got a tattoo of my wedding ring, and I got a tattoo of something with my kids. So, like we all have matching turtle tattoos. So I think... My answer is pretty clear. No, I'd get it covered up, and I'd get something amazing that glorified the Lord. I'm actually thinking about getting tetelestai here on my arm or something like that.
Whoa.
So really the person we need to ask is the pure and pristine, uninked skin, Brian Broderson.
Edgy Ed.
Well, you know. Yeah. It's, you know, if you put stuff like that, people ask you questions.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, tattoos are conversation starters.
Yeah, that's true. You know, everybody in my family has a tattoo except me and my wife. So all of our kids, my sisters have tattoos.
Your sisters? That's wild.
Oh, you know, my dad was a biker, so tattoos
that was
common in our house when we were young. Now, speaking of the laser process, and prior to laser process of removing tattoos, there were other methods. And my sister went through, she just, you know, she got these tattoos when she was young. She didn't like what they represented. She felt sort of humiliated by them. This was before tattoos became a big thing again.
Right.
So she had them actually removed through a process that was quite painful, honestly. So I personally, if I was in this situation, I would probably ink over the existing tattoo versus getting
just for the pain factor alone.
Exactly.
Keep in mind, we almost got him to get a tattoo in Israel, but he did not.
No moral qualms.
You're just afraid.
You need to get some eagle wings along your back, right?
Get it right
across
his back.
What you're really after?
That's what he should get.
A pair of eagle wings across your back.
Eagle wings on your back.
My sons, if I would have come back with a tattoo without them being a part of it, they would have been offended.
So could we sign you up right now to get a tattoo with the boys?
You know, I saw a picture of Matt the other day, Matt Chandler.
Matt Chandler, who got a tattoo with us
in Israel. And, you know, Matt's sitting there doing his thing. You know, Matt is so, he's just so clean cut and great. And he'd see this tattoo on his arm, and I thought, that thing looks so cool.
It does, I'm telling you. So
he got a good tattoo.
So David, you get a cover-up. Tell us what you get so that we can get Brian Broderson out to a tat shop and get one done as well. And
we will have Neil come into the studio and
we
do
could.
It
I could
on
get a
camera.
Razook right here.
Right here.
Yep.
In my office.
That would be amazing. I'd like, we could do it live on the air. Come on. Let's
that
go.
Would be good.
If I ever get a tattoo, good. It'll be
Bobby's. No, Bobby's ready to go. Let's do it in the office, right? I mean, during the show, we're going to get a tattoo. David, you've inspired trouble.
I'll design one for you, Brian.
I'll pass out like John Tabui.
Exactly.
David, thanks for your phone call from Virginia. We've got to take a break here on Pastor's Perspective, but we'll be back with more of your questions. What do you want to ask us? 888-564-6173 is the number to call from now till 4 p.m. Pacific time. 888-564-6173. Can you back that up, Bobby? I think Bobby just put a picture on YouTube of what... No, back it up. Back it
you
up.
You can't see all
back
it looks like is a white sheet, Bobby. Back.
Oh. Okay, we'll have to see it after the break.
No, we can't see it.
And we'll be right back. 888-564-6173. We're back on Pastor's Perspective. Thank you so much for joining us on the radio or on Facebook or YouTube. Maybe you're listening on a podcast. Thank you very much. There's so many ways to listen nowadays and to watch, too. But we'd love to hear from you. Get your questions at 888-564-6173. I'm Brian Perez here with Brian Broderson, Bobby Conway, and Dr. Ed Stetzer, all ready to answer your questions at 888-564-6173. So, Bobby, let's see that photo now, or the drawing that you did of the tattoo that you think Brian should get.
I was saying I could do a tattoo for Brian because I was just sitting here
Turn it at a 45-degree angle so people on YouTube... No, don't move it up. Turn it at a 45-degree angle from the camera, and we can see it. That's not a 45-degree angle. That's that's the opposite of a 45-degree. Turn it to the... No, you're turning... Like
kind of like
it,
this.
There
kinda
it like is. This. There it is.
Yes,
there
perfect.
That's pretty good.
Wow.
That's pretty good. You drew that, huh? Like, everyone on radio is like, are you people idiots? It's literally, we can't see the drawing.
It's a picture of me. That's great.
I look pretty good. That was a picture of you?
Yeah.
That's what I
thought it was Brad Pitt.
No, it's...
Well, we get mistaken for the
very
same.
Very comforting.
All the time.
I can see that.
Yes.
I can see that.
I texted it to you, Brian. It's got some proportion work that I'm...
Brian's strength is not texting, fixing, we'll see. He never responds to my texts.
What? Come on.
All right. So let's answer another question that was sent in online. This one is something else that Pastor Brian recently said.
This is pretty much, Brian, would you please clarify everything you said publicly?
Yes. Okay. So this is from CJ. Recently, Brian answered a question from a father regarding his daughter getting married to her girlfriend. The father stated he knew it was a sin against God and refused to walk her down the aisle as she requested. He was confused whether attending was proper in God's eyes. Brian responded and said there's not one answer, that everyone's situation is different. However, isn't there actually one real answer according to God's word? Isn't the ceremony itself a sin against God? Isn't attending, supporting, or participating in it the same as going with your child to the insurance company while they fill out a false claim, or driving them to a parking lot while they steal a car? Isn't encouraging, participating, and supporting our loved ones in any sin, including same-sex marriage, go against God and considered a sin? Doesn't that make us complicit in their sin because we are afraid they won't feel loved or supported? The call genuinely confused me, knowing God's word the way that I do. Would that not also confuse so many others?
I don't think that was a question. I think that was a statement of their view.
Sounded like it. Yeah, there were a few question marks.
To make it sound like a question, but I think it was a statement of their view.
Yes.
CJ does end, I'm not looking for controversy or argument by asking this. I have much confusion since that call. I can't find anything in the Bible that supports what Brian said by showing up for an act of sin.
I think it's one of the great questions of our day that people are talking about all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said, there's not one size fits all here. Jesus showed up at places that I think clearly people in his day, and especially religious leaders, did not think he should be there, did not approve of him being there. Jesus associated with people that were considered by the religious leaders of the day to be people that you should never associate with if you were a truly godly person. And so I think looking at the model of Jesus, and I've made this clear so many times, I disagree that going to such a wedding, if you feel inclined to, I disagree that it's necessarily supporting it. So some say if you're there, you're supporting it regardless. You're approving it regardless. I disagree. I don't think so, because the people that I know that have actually gone into situations like this, it has been crystal clear up front to the person that's actually getting married that the person coming does not approve. And nevertheless, they are coming for other reasons. So I'll tell just a really quick story that might shed a little bit of light on it. Maybe it won't help at all. But I have a friend who whose daughter was married or got married to another woman. She wrestled, her and her husband wrestled with what they should do. In the end, godly people, wonderful, just amazing folks, really dear to my heart. They wrestled with what they should do. In the end, they felt like the Lord was leading them to go and just to be there. You know, this is her daughter. She doesn't approve. Her daughter knows she doesn't approve. She's a Christian. She shared the gospel with her, so on and so forth. She goes. She gets married. She gets married to this woman. They invite them over to the house. They have them over to just feed them dinner and enjoy time with them, build a relationship. Not too long into the marriage, the daughter is diagnosed with a rare form of cancer.
Mm.
And within a short period of time, she dies.
Mm.
And during this period of time, because of the connection that was made by her mother attending the wedding and then following up on that, she was able to minister to her daughter all the way through the rest of her life and lead her to the Lord in the end, and also plant a seed in the life of the, you know, the same-sex partner that, of course, wow, lost their partner. So, you know, when I hear stories like that and I know people, I think, well, I don't, you know, this is why I believe that the Spirit of God, where now some people would say, and of course we know that there are pastors who would say, this is black and white, crystal clear, sure, there is no—
I mean, when Alistair Begg said something similar,
yeah,
it ended up all over the news, all and radio the stations pulled his program, yeah, everything else, yeah.
Yeah. So some people think it's black and white, yeah, crystal clear. I just don't see it that way. Right. So if you agree, fine. If you don't agree, that's okay too.
I don't see it the same way you do.
Yeah.
And that, like you said, that's okay. I would say that if you do see it the way you do,
yeah,
one of the caveats you put in there is that you did say that the person knew where the person stood on these issues.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
In every case, yeah.
And I think that's important to it. But I'd come to a different conclusion. I wouldn't go.
Yeah.
But I understand.
Yeah. And I'm not saying I would go.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying that, yeah, I don't think that you can just blanketly
across the
say,
board, make it a,
absolutely.
It's an individual conscience decision.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, where I think Alistair Begg, I think, surprised a lot of people when he said, I would tell her to go to the wedding and bring a gift.
Yeah.
But he did say all those caveats as well, yeah, that, you know,
right,
you know, like a lot of these things right now, we're kind of dealing with a lot of confusion about sexuality and gender in our culture.
Yeah.
And people are asking, how do I build bridges?
Right.
And do I, you know, in this case, go to a gay wedding, or it might be used pronouns, preferred pronouns, yeah, things of that sort. And though my conclusions are probably on the more conservative side on those things, if your conclusions, yeah, are less so, I would say make sure that people know where you are,
yeah,
and why you're doing those things if you're doing them. Because that kind of gets part of his question is like, are you saying you don't approve, but you want to stay in relationship with that person?
Yeah. And that, yeah, and I mean, that is sometimes people are framing it that way, right, that, well, I'm afraid that I'll lose their friendship or whatever. Right. Now, of course, we know already that in some cases, for the gospel's sake, you are going to lose relationships.
Sure.
But I just don't know that this is a gospel issue like that. And I think, too, if you take I think there has been a tendency, we've talked about this many times before, Bobby, we've talked about it a lot. I do think there is a tendency to take homosexuality, and among Christians, there has been a tendency to take it and put it sort of in a category by itself of sin. I like to tell this story because it's funny, but I had a lady come up to me after church one day a few years ago, and she owns a business, and she, you know, inadvertently hired a gay person. And after the person began to work for her and so forth, you know, discovered that the person was gay. And she comes to me and she's very distressed about this and she doesn't know what to do. And so as I listened to her, I said, okay, let me ask you this question. Do you have any other sinners that work for you? And she just started laughing because she obviously at that point she realized, okay, what she was doing is she was taking one sin and kind of putting it in a category by itself, excluding it from other sins. So I think that's a tricky thing. I mean, that's where we have to be careful. So if I say absolutely 100% under no condition can a person attend a wedding like this, well, okay, let's talk about other weddings. Let's mm-hmm. talk about people who are non-believers getting married. Let's talk about a professing Christian getting married to a Buddhist or to
a non-Christian, which would be unequally yoked, yeah. which we know is not right.
So there's a whole bunch of factors here, I think, that need to be taken into consideration. And again, I'm not saying, yes, go do it. I'm saying you need to seek the Lord based upon his word and the conviction that the Spirit gives you. And going back to the story I told of my friend, I would, with hindsight now, I would look and see it seemed like the Lord, you know, led them into that situation. So,
okay, Bobby, go ahead.
The only thing I would add is, you know, and Ed as a missiologist would know this, and Brian, you would too. I mean, there are situations where you have missionaries go into a particular milieu to do ministry, and it's a polygamous culture per se. And they're met with, well, what do we do in this situation? Like, okay, the person gets saved. Do they just tell the person, well, pick which one you want to keep and send the rest off? Or do they, you know, recognize, you know what, we're going to work with this situation while, you know, anybody that wants to get married moving forward, we're going to lay out what biblical marriage is. So I think that without answering the question here, I do think that those that are young, that are growing up in this culture, they're going to be met with a whole host of questions that the decisions that are being shaped in our culture right now, they're going to have to think through this in a missional way, what that means, where they're not compromising the gospel, where they're figuring out what they can do, what they cannot do. And this gets tricky. Now, I'm not, you know, saying that it's the same thing. I'm just giving an example of other contexts when people show up to do missions. You know, they're met with some questions that they weren't used to in our own culture. And so I think what's happening a little bit is because so much is new in our culture, there's a lot of differences of opinion with pastors as far as the approach of going or not going, but it doesn't mean that there's not alignment with a lot of these pastors on what a biblical marriage is. They're just trying to figure out how to keep people open to the gospel.
CJ, thank you for sending in your question online. Now let's go back to the phones at 888-564-6173. Michelle in Fullerton, welcome to Pastor's Perspective. You're on with Brian Broderson, Bobby Conway, and Dr. Ed Stetzer.
Hi, pastors.
Hi.
My question is, I was watching an interview with a famous person, and they were talking to the interviewer, and then the interviewer pointed out clearly he had regretted. So this person sold their soul to the devil so that they could be famous and, you know, rich, and they became famous and they became rich, and now their career is, you know, they're a little bit older and stuff, and they truly regret that they did that. Now, once you do that, the devil always lies to us. Once you do that, does he have a chance for God to forgive him?
Pastor Brian?
Why are you giving me all the fun questions today?
These have not been like, it's not like, well, the tattoo one was fun. Let's go back to the tattoo one, though.
Yeah.
All right, so go ahead.
Well, yeah. You know, think about it this way. The short answer is, what is the short answer? Is it yes or no? I mean, he can be forgiven. That is the short answer.
If that's what you believe. But you don't have a tattoo, so how do you know?
Yeah. But think about this. You know, you're... Everybody, this is what the Bible says. It's shocking to some people. Everybody is actually under the control of the devil unless you are the possession of Jesus Christ. So the whole world lies in the grasp of the wicked one, the Apostle John tells us. And this, it's the spirit of disobedience is now working in, the spirit of the world is now working in the children of disobedience. So the whole world lies in the grip of the wicked one. You come out from the grip of the wicked one when you come to faith in Jesus. He pulls you out of the kingdom of darkness and transfers you into the kingdom of light. So the idea that you're going to somehow sell your soul to the devil and that's an irrevocable thing, I don't think you could support that biblically. Jesus is the one who paid for your soul. So he's the one ultimately who is able to redeem it, having paid the price for it. So I don't believe that it is an irrevocable situation, if it's even possible in the first place.
Co-sign with Pastor Brian Brodersen.
Yes.
Michelle, thank you for calling in with your question here on Pastor's Perspective at 888-564-6173. And now we go to Dean in Huntington Beach, California. Hi there, Dean.
Hi, guys. My question is, does Satan have access to our dreams, or do all dreams come from God?
Let's ask the dean. Dean, what do you say to the dean?
I don't think all dreams come from God.
I'm absolutely certain they don't.
Yeah. You've had some dreams that aren't from the Lord.
Many. Most.
Most. I think dreams come from our subconscious. I think the question is important. So I do think that, yes, I mean, if we're, let's do it, and this, David, excuse me, Dean, this may be a little bit of a roundabout route to get to your question, but if you're right now in a difficult situation and Satan has been discouraging you and just been beat down by that, I imagine that's going to be reflected in your dreams. So is it possible for Satan to get in your dreams? I think that's probably yes. But at the same time, I would say that there's not like this direct channel where Satan can get into our brain and minds, where I do think the Lord can do. I think God does speak at times through dreams.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't think that's the same way that Satan has intervened into our sleeping hours in the same way. But I think ultimately that that dreams generally come from our subconscious, the things we're struggling with that are on our mind, and those certainly can be influenced by the struggles of our day, the satanic impulses and influence in our lives.
Or they come from places where God only knows where they come from, because what was I even dreaming about?
I have some really weird dreams sometimes.
I do too.
I dreamed one time that I was a car. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, how am I a car? I woke up.
What is in your subconscious?
I don't even know.
How'd you dream that you were
a car? I can't imagine. So,
what kind of car were you?
I don't even know. But I have the weirdest dreams. Like, I have very vivid dreams. A lot of times I'm flying. Not in an airplane, but like physically flying.
Superman.
I have dreams sometimes I'm a musician. That's a secret yearning. I used to play guitar.
I could see that in your future, though, Ed.
You can see me flying?
I could see you flying. Yeah.
Flying, that's true. That's true. All right.
You could be a musician, too. You've got the tattoos.
I do play guitar. Did you know I play guitar?
You know, I did know that because I heard you play guitar.
Where'd you hear me play guitar?
At maybe church.
Oh, I was doing a sermon once, and I grabbed a guitar in a sermon and led it in a song. So that's true. Back in, that's like, I was wearing a suit and tie. That was Moody Church days. I was the interim pastor. Those of you who don't know, I was the interim pastor of a church in Chicago called the Moody Church. And I was a little bit of a, I was 4 years as the interim, but I was a little out of the norm for Moody Church interims or pastors. But one time I did pick up the guitar and sang a song.
I saw that. I
love that you were watching
my
sermons at the Moody Church. Thank you for that. Because I've been watching your sermons at Calvary Chapel.
Did you know I play guitar too?
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I've never watched you play guitar.
Yeah. Well, I haven't picked one up and played in front of the church.
Ever? I did in front
Not
of thousands.
In a long time.
Like, I lifted up in front of thousands of people
Not
and played the
time.
Guitar.
So. Yeah. I'll show you some pictures of my old band.
So what's the answer to this question, though? So, Bobby, what do you think? Is it possible for Satan to get into dreams, or all dreams come from God?
Well, I think that could be a false dichotomy. I mean, it can be a number of things, and you've already alluded to it. So could a dream come from God? Yes. Could a dream come from Satan? Is it always God or Satan? No. It could be, our own life, our subconscious. And Freud was big on this. Freud had a lot of things that were, out in left field. But one of the things that, he was very much into was the subconscious and drawing that out and trying to tap into what's going on there. And so I do think that God used dreams in the Bible. We see with different characters. I am not somebody that can think of any dreams that I've had except one where I've wondered, was God trying to give me a warning through a dream? And I found myself just really frustrated and angry, and I drove off a cliff, and my family was in the car.
Oh my.
And we were going through a tough season in parenting, and Dawson and I were having all kinds of conflict, and this was just one of these seasons where I just wondered when I woke up, like, Bobby, you need to stay poised in your parenting because, you know, anger can lead to bad things. And, you know, I mean, I never got violent with my son. But at the same token, the dream was scary because, you know, you just realize that you, you're driving in a car. I found myself fearful. What if we got an argument and I just swung the car into some, you know, traffic or drove into something? So I took that very seriously to just really do my best to pay attention to how my emotions were getting worked up in parenting, because I was going through a season with my son that I didn't know how to parent him in. And I just felt at a total loss. And so I would just resort to, you know, anger and, you know, get in the flesh and, you know, act stupid and, you know, get childish. And I think the Lord was just trying to say, you know what, you need to grow up here. You need to be careful.
That's cool.
And I think that I took that as a response and a rebuke from the Lord. But outside of that, hey, I don't know.
Have you had a dream, Ed, that you say the Lord, this was definitely something the Lord gave me?
You know, I think so. I don't remember off the top of my head that there was some like interaction that led to a significant life change, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, they're just not like, he had a specific example, but I didn't like have a dream and, you know, move to California and, you know, come to Biola or something. But yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. I kind of feel like I should have one to remember, but I don't. But I mean, it does. I'm guessing that's just pretty normal. You like have a dream, the Lord uses it in your life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
And like in the next segment, I'm going to think of it and just blurt it out.
Well, if you join us next week, you can tell us. We'll just ask the Lord to give you a dream.
I had a dream about a tattoo once. And I got, no, I didn't. I didn't. Just coming back to the theme.
Really quick, for the uninitiated, tell us about Moody Church. Why is it called Moody Church? Is it a bunch of sad people?
Because sometimes they're happy. Sometimes they're sad.
I just always thought that name was an interesting. I know why.
You know why it is.
I know why, but there's some people listening.
So, because my daughters used to think it was the funniest thing. They would be like, they were teenagers at the time, and they're like, so you're going to Moody Church. Are they going to be sad today? Are they going to be happy today? So the executive pastor of Moody Church, his daughter lives in Southern California. So they could be listening right now because he's here. She's having a baby, and mom and dad are here. They're our good friends, the Perchies. And, but D.L. Moody, of course, is it was called Illinois Street Church. When D.L. Moody died, they changed the name to the Moody Church. And so it's named after D.L. Moody. And it's named after the same person as Moody Bible Institute. Mm-hmm. But they are separate organizations in the same town, both founded by the great evangelist, D.L. Moody, one of the great evangelists of our day. And it was fascinating to be the interim pastor of the church that he started.
Yeah.
He was never the pastor of, which is always interesting to people. He never considered himself a pastor. But it was fascinating there. But I was there for 4 years, which is longer. I was the interim pastor of Moody Church for longer than four of the actual pastors of Moody Church were pastors of Moody Church.
Wow.
Because, you know, after a very well-known pastor, there's usually someone who lasts 18 months, you know, and then they get another one. But so Erwin Lutzer is now pastor emeritus, but, you know, Harry Ironside was there. Warren Wiersbe was there. Just
all these names.
Yeah. And so you'd be proud of me. I wore a suit and tie. Ellen Redpath. I don't know how many you know, like you can go down there. It's like amazing list.
Yeah. It is amazing. Yeah. I forgot that. I mean, Wiersbe. I forgot Wiersbe. I mean, he would have been the most recent. And
no.
From Ironside. And
from that year. Ironside guys, would be before Wiersbe for sure. Yeah.
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 So it's not just a church with a bunch of emo people.
Wow. That you've really updated that in significant ways. Emo. So.
I think we have time for one more. Joanna in Orange County, what's your question for us today?
Hey, pastors. Is it okay or is it for a Christian to practice yoga? I was in a Bible study this week and the conversation came up and it got really interesting because they said that we have to be careful and cautious to practice yoga because of its origins, like with the Hinduism and the whole meditation component.
Maybe it matters, does this Christian have tattoos? Because if a Christian with tattoos can do yoga.
Asking the question, she gave the answer. Because I think that, I mean, yoga has Hindu origins. We know that. But most people who practice yoga are doing it for exercise.
Yep.
And so what I would say is, if you're in a yoga situation where it's a lot more than that, I would be concerned. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's the caution of that as well.
Yeah, and most yoga in the Western world is not that these days. Most of it is exercise. Yeah. It's stretching and all of that. So if they want you to chant and do things like that, then you'd say, well, you know, I'll just pray or I'll sing a praise song or something like that.
Or don't participate if it's all Hindu.
Yeah.
I mean, it don't participate.
But even, you know, this question has been asked about martial arts as well because they have their origin in the East and, you know, some of that. So if you stay away from the spiritual side of it, you're fine. If you use it strictly as a means of exercise and you know, yes, you can breathe in and breathe out and do some.
You're for breathing. That's a plus.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to breathe in order to exercise.
Good. Yeah. It's helpful. Thank you for that bold advice.
Oh, good. I can take a deep breath now. Bobby Conway, what say you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I know that when Ed practices the downward dog, he makes sure that he focuses on his deep breathing as well. And he plays with rocks and all that good stuff. So, yes.
I don't even know what these things are, the downward dog. I'm pretty sure that's a yoga pose, right? See, this is what happens. This is when he goes off to North Carolina. He gets tattoos, gets his hair all frizzy, and now he knows what yoga poses are. So we know what Bobby's doing.
Hey, well, yeah, we know your Gen Z language.
Got some Riz.
Got some Riz.
That is all the time we have on today's program. Thank you for joining us live on the radio and on Facebook and YouTube. Today's episode will be archived on Facebook and YouTube and Spotify as well a little bit later on. Don't forget, we have a baptism coming up this Sunday at Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, right after second service. You can get all the details at cccm.com. Yep, indeed. For Brian Broderson, Bobby Conway, and Dr. Ed Stetzer, the Dean at the Talbot School of Theology at Biola University, thank you for joining us today. I'm Brian Perez. God bless you. Pastor's Perspective was sponsored by Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.
Equipping the saints with sound biblical instruction. This is K-Wave 107.9.